This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
But what I like to do today is to open it up for you if you have any questions on that. And I'd really like you, if you've got questions or queries, to focus on what you've been hearing in these last few days. Please don't go off on. Let's try and keep it. If you've got any doubts, if you want some clarification about what's been said over these last few days, then maybe we could spend the rest of our time here this morning just polishing a little bit. So if anybody has any thoughts. But then you don't have a blue sky. You've got clouds. Where's the blue sky? It's full of clouds. There's no blue sky. And that's our normal condition. We would say that we're full of clouds, all different shades of clouds, but clouds nevertheless. And so the experience of our blue sky, well, we don't know, especially in our climate, if you want to make that link, you know, we can go for weeks and never see a blue sky here. It's just full of clouds all the time, and that's our mind. But when you learn to bring stillness in amongst all of that, you learn to let all of that restlessness go, all of those aspects of your personality, whatever they may be, which you learn primarily or initially when you're on the cushion, when you come to the cushion and you engage with our form of meditation, which is to let go. That's all. We're not putting anything in its place. We're letting go. We're not, no formulas, no paths, but just simply letting go of the dark clouds, to use that metaphor. And when you let go of the dark clouds, what happens? What's your experience? Is a blue sky. So you can't have a blue sky and lots of clouds at the same time. And that blue sky is the aspiration, is your stillness, is your natural stillness, is your awareness when it's uncluttered, when it's not been diverted and lost in the confusion of the mind. And when you let them go, you begin to taste the blue skies. You begin to get that sense of knowing your awareness, which is not an object, which doesn't have a limit. The more you stay with your awareness, the more you realise that your awareness is not an object. It's got no parameters. It's got no identity other than the fact that it's still, unlike everything else you've got, which are things that are coming and going and crashing and banging, things of all different shapes and sizes. that sense of openness, that's what it is. It doesn't sort of rise and pass away, and to come to that place is very much your starting position, as it were, as much as you can begin to approximate that sense of openness is where, even in a small degree, but the more rooted it is with you, the better. So then you can begin to reflect, then you can begin to see. So then where the white cloud comes in, to use that metaphor, is that you have the clear open blue sky, but what you can allow yourself within that blue sky is to have that ability to contemplate. In other words, the white cloud, or an aspect of contemplation, insight, whatever, whichever tool you wish to use. But the skill, the trick, if you like, is to have the white cloud but not lose the blue sky. So you've got this is the predominant. This is established so that you don't lose the blue sky. So in other words, you don't lose your awareness. You don't lose that clarity. And whilst you've got that clarity, you can bring perspectives into what you're experiencing with what may flow by, that you can begin to engage with it or look at it, whatever you feel you need to do to get to know this, but you don't lose the blue sky. The blue sky is still with you. That's the most crucial feature of this training. The number one, the heart of you, the mandal of this practice, is your awareness, is stillness. Call it what you like, spaciousness, no thingness, emptiness, whatever label you like to put on it. We're very familiar with the word awareness because we feel like we have awareness. When you start talking about emptiness, then your imagination goes off and all sorts of silly things start to appear. But awareness is something quite personal, and you can accept that you have awareness. Well, that's it. You see that awareness there. It isn't anything. It isn't an object. It isn't a formula. It is emptiness itself. And that you're beginning to discover, that is your true condition. Your true condition is this blue sky. That is your true condition. But what we do, we let the clouds, we don't see it. But as we all know, and probably a child might struggle with this, that we do know that actually I'm totally covered in all of these clouds, but I do know just beyond the clouds there is a blue sky. Actually, the sky doesn't get touched by the clouds, even though for us it becomes obscure, but the sky is still there. Just jump in an aeroplane if you don't believe that, or go to the top of a mountain and look down on the clouds and look up, and it's totally clear and untouched by all of this. That's a very good metaphor of your condition, that just beyond this turmoil there is a part of you that is permanently still. And it's for us to access it. It's for us to rediscover, to discover, not create. You don't create the sky, it's already there. You lose it, but that doesn't mean to say that it's gone. It's about learning to find that natural condition. And when you do, from there you can begin to wake up to yourself, wake up to this thing that previously you were completely consumed by. You were too close, like I was saying just now. You're so close to something, you can't see it. You don't know it. You're part of it. You're consumed by it. In fact, you're the one who's keeping the whole thing going. And you can't, you're blind. Now there's a part of you that isn't blind. And that's why it's the most important feature of your makeup, is to forever come in to seek out that place and to know what you have to do in order to get to that place. What you have to do is simply let go. And when you let go, it will reveal itself. Just like these clouds, when they part, you don't make the blue sky. You don't get up there with a paintbrush and paint it blue. It's already there. It parts and it reveals itself. It's exactly the same. And the tools, then when you have that openness, that sense of space there, then you can bring the tools, and what you're beginning to experience that doesn't take away your blue sky. There you can begin to get to understand, get to know it, and begin to discover all the different opportunities you have to get to know, to experience it, to know it, to get to. So that in time, when you really do get to know it, and of course it, it's this isn't just watching something. This is deeply, deeply personal. You can't get any closer. This whole thing is a very personal experience. It has to be. If it's out there somewhere, then forget it. That's not Dharma. It's got to be turning in, coming in, and it's got to be you who you're looking at, who you consider to be you. And from there, you can wake up to see what it really is, not what you think that it is. You thought it's this thing. But now you begin to see, because you're close and because you can, with that still, you can begin to see what it's about, how it works, how it fits together, how, in fact, you're the one who's actually keeping it going. You're fueling it. You're keeping it alive. You can see that. And you can see its essential nature, whatever it is dukkha. You see that this is the issue. This is why I don't feel right. This is it. And when you see it, the more you see it, the more you get to know it. You begin to pull back. You stop feeding it, because you know that you keep feeding it, you're just going to drag yourself down and make yourself feel really unpleasant, unhappy. So you can begin. And you don't go there. And when you see it, you can also turn your back on it and say, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not turning my back on it because I don't want to know it. Is that I just don't want to go there anymore, because now I know what it's about. I'm just no. That's where the no comes in. No, I'm not doing that. You're saying no. Not through suppression, but through wisdom, through knowing. No, I'm not doing it, because that's dukkha. That's the very thing that makes me suffer. And you see that you are the creator of that. It's not out there, it's in here. And so therefore, you create it, now you're uncreating it. And that's all coming from that. If you don't have that sense of spacious, that sense, that ability to observe and to reflect, then you'll always be the victim of it. You won't be able to. That's why for us, our cultivation of stillness is number one. And the more stillness you have, then you begin to learn It's reality, and it's not just a small thing, but that's a growing understanding of what that stillness ultimately is. There is that's a journey in itself, but also you begin to use that experience. You begin to use that opportunity in a positive way. To see yourself, to get to know yourself, so that you can begin to let that go. Now, what can happen, as I touched on the other day, that if you don't know what to do with that awareness, because all humans have got self-awareness, it can be something very destructive, because you're seeing yourself even, and you don't like it. You don't like what you see, and you end up hating yourself, and you end up hating life, and then you can find, well, the only way out, there's only one way out of this. That's not using awareness for in a skillful way, in the way that we can use it. But if you know how to use it, it's the gateway to your liberation. It's the way out. In fact, it's the only way out. Even if you go down ways of using all sorts of techniques and methods and stuff, at the end of the day, it's all about awareness. And it's about nurturing awareness. And it's awareness that ultimately lets go of this thing that we call samsara, to be liberated, to permanently take refuge in that place of emptiness, of nothingness, which is your true condition. So does that make it a bit easier? It's all concepts. These are all words, but you've got to pick your way through, and so that you can get what they're pointing to, you know. And it is a, you have to keep coming back to it. I mean, they're very simple metaphors in ways, but there's a lot to them. There's more than just meets the eye, as it were. You've got to look into and get familiar, get comfortable with it, and then you can comfortably come into those situations and know what you can do. Now I know what I can do with this experience, and begin to use it dharmically and positively. Then things start to change. Things start to.
Yeah, I suppose what I'm taking is still not lose the space, the stillness, the spaciousness, and get caught up in the tools.
Yeah, well that can turn on you. Having the tools can turn on you. Yeah, absolutely. And they can become just another object, another possession. And there are dangers with everything that we engage with. There's always a downside. It's not all just getting it right. You can always get it wrong. You can always be misunderstood, misinterpreted. And every moment of your whole dharmic life has the danger of becoming an ego trip. It's mine. I'm the one who's doing this. I'm the wise one. I'm the one who's contemplating. I'm the one who's waking up me. And when that comes along, that then starts to get polluted. It begins to get discoloured. And you lose it. And that has to be... You have to be alive to that. It's all about letting go, not being caught up and not holding on. And you have Bodhidharma Sangha, which helps you to walk that very, very difficult path that's absolutely fraught with dangers. There's little maras lurking behind every bush, ready to leap out at you and stop you. And some of those maras are so clever you don't even know that they're maras. They're the most dangerous ones. That's why we always need to be in that, to willingly put ourselves in that environment where we can be checked, where we can check ourselves, where we can be checked, where these dangers can be nipped in the bud, as it were, before they take hold. That's what Bodhidharma Sangha is for. So it's one of its features is a checking mechanism. So you can keep your eye on yourself, and how others can keep eye on you, and the teacher can keep their eye. And so everything is, as you tiptoe, as it were, through the jungle, all these things. No, you have to evoke the white cloud. You have to turn to it. That when you have stillness, you have that reflective quality. Awareness has that mirror-like quality, right? That you know that you're still. You've got this sense of stillness. But you're not dead. You're awake. And you can begin to... You can be... And as things start flowing by, as they do, you can... be aware that something's coming along to tempt you. Yeah?
That's what I meant by the example. Something coming along, that's
well,
a white cloud.
Hang on, that's not a white cloud. You have that... This isn't actually the toolbox. This is the blue sky. This isn't the toolbox. This is the white sky, which is your awareness. And your awareness has that quality of being like a mirror. So in other words, you see, you can see it and know it, but you don't get involved with it, right? You don't get involved with it. So there's nothing happening other than the fact that you know that there is this dark cloud rolling in with all sorts of temptations there, all sorts of familiarities, whether it's greed, hatred, delusion, your fears, whatever it may be, however it may manifest, and it's coming to you. and you're sitting there in that stillness, and there's a part of you that rah, wants to grab it, or you get the sense that it grabs you, whichever. But there's a sense of identity, that's what it is. There's an identification with that that's floating by you. And when you do that, you lose your way, you lose the right. So that when your stillness is established to the degree that you have that reflective thing, something comes along and you see it and you see the danger, you know what's going to happen, but you have that clarity, and there's wisdom in that. It's not just like an ordinary mirror. There is a discernment, if you like, that you have a choice. You don't think I have a choice. You just know, as a knowing, that if I'm not careful, I'm going to lose this, and I'm going to be off with that. Right. So that's just naked seeing. So you just see it and it goes. That's not the tool bag. That's the basis. That's the fundamental, that's the environment there. Now, if that thing comes along and it won't just float by, it won't just come to be and cease to be. Something that comes and sits with you and is always tempting you. Come on, Jonathan. Come on, never mind all this Buddhist nonsense. Let's have a bit of fun here. Let's go off into this fantasy. You know, we're rocking in front of 50,000 people in Madison Square Gardens, eh? All the stuff is there. Yes, and it's there. Come on, boy. Right. Now, there's the temptation, but you see it and you know it for what it is. And you know what's going to happen if you give in to that. But you stand your ground, as it were, right? But it's still with you, and it's still always poking. Come on. I'm not going to go that easy, mate. I'm just going to keep... So you leave it. Now, what you can do is get out of the way. And you can put... Not something like that, because that's probably quite a pleasant thing, but something that may be unpleasant. You say, oh. But you learn... to leave it alone, you learn as much as you can, and there's some sort of a connection there, but you're not lost yourself, you're not gone, you still got that quality there. Now, when you're in that position, you can then evoke, you can begin to not just observe it, not just know it, but you can, well, you observe it, but you can begin to take perspectives on it. You begin to realise, well, hang on, this is just something's passing. This isn't actually real as I think that it is. It's actually something that you realise that if I just, as it were, stand my ground, it will come and it will go. So you can evoke the law of impermanence, that if you don't get carried by it, if you don't get lost in it, if you have the steadfastness to just be with it and just evoke that perception, if you like. It's not a lot of thinking, it's just a turning, it's just a perspective that you take and see, well, hang on, this experience is impermanent. And if I learn to leave it alone, it will come to be and cease to be. And you'll begin to see it in a way that you've never seen it before. That actually these things that you're caught by, as an example, things that you're caught by, that you get lost in, that consume you, that bring so much dukkha and unpleasantness and all the rest of it, if somehow you can have that, learn that ability, not through avoidance, but learn to, don't get sucked in by it. And if you can just stand your ground, as it were, and not get sucked in by it, and bear with it, because there'll be a lot of emotion there, because this is, come on, my boy, come on, I want you, and all of this. So this is not just a passive looking at, like watching a movie. there is the whole of you that's being involved with this, but there's that spark that's there because of this stillness there. That if I can just stay with it without being sucked into it, it will go into change. and then you can leave it. But in that process there, you're beginning to realise that things are impermanent. And if things are impermanent, why do you need to keep grabbing hold of things? And the things that you do like, that you do want to grab hold of, and you want to keep, they too are impermanent. And you realise then, well, I'm trying to hold something that's always in a state of flux. And if you then try to hold on to something and you don't want to let it go, that when it will inevitably go into change, you're going to be very downhearted, you're going to suffer. And you realise that if you grab hold of things, that you are creating the potential of suffering for yourself with that. Because you want to hold it, you want to possess it, you want to keep it, as you do with things that, you know, things that are pleasant, things that you want. But to see that if you do that, you can see that that's the potential for suffering there, because it will go into change because you're holding on to it. Now the trick of that is, assuming it's something pleasant, is to learn to engage with whatever that is, but at the same time know that it is going to go into change, so you don't grasp it with that sense of permanence. That you actually enjoy it and it's fantastic, you know, if it is that sort of experience. But don't get too hung up on this, because it's soon gonna move on, as all things move on. So when it does move on, you're free of suffering. You enjoy it, it is what it is, and then when it changes, you let it go. That's called freedom. You live life, but you're not caught by it. You're not enslaved to it. That's getting a sense of this thing called impermanence. As an example, there. That's one of the tools. That's a tool that you picked out the toolbox, and when it's come along, you've decided to see this thing that you are certain that's real and solid, that so many of these things, you never see things as being impermanent. They just happen to be hiding somewhere, and then they come up. But actually, it's a part of something that's permanent, and that's why we get caught by these things. If we begin to see things are transient, we can enjoy it if it's something to be enjoyed, but we don't get so sucked into it that we can't let it go. And that, you know, that goes for relationships as much as anything. Things change. We change. The person changes. Why aren't you the person I met 5 years ago? You've changed. You've got to be like that for me to like you. And now you're changing into somebody I don't recognise. You've got to be like this. Then you suffer. And they suffer. And never mind you changing as well. You don't realise that. And they could have the same feeling towards you. For example, that's not acknowledging that things are changing. That's you want, you know, like a personal thing, you are like this. You are this person I met, and that's who you are going to be. You must have these qualities, you must have these things that I like about you, and etc. You are, and this is why I'm attracted to you, because you are like this. And then you wonder after a few years why relationships begin to fall to pieces, because you're holding on to something that no longer exists, that things are changing and you can't go with the change, whatever that implication of that is. Or at least the acceptance that people change and still have the willingness to still embrace them, as it were, but, you know, accept that things are always on the move. It can have such a radical impact. We don't. We all seem to think that we know about impermanence, but actually, we do when it's out there. We don't see impermanence in here, but you see that's the cause of suffering there. That's the primary cause of suffering. But you can observe the suffering. You can see that the attachment that you have for this thing that's coming by you. And rather than the perspective of impermanence, you can look at it closely and see that it's not what you might think that it be, but when you look closely enough, you see there's a lot of agitation, there's insecurity, there's all sorts of stuff that creates dukkha. And you actually, this thing then, whilst you thought it was like this, actually when you look at it, and you get to see it in the round, from this perspective, you see it's just a bundle of suffering. And why are you suffering? And all the questions that can come out of that. All of this coming from this place where you can sort of, as it were, entrench yourself and make these observations so that you begin to see things in a completely different way than you used to. You used to think they were like this, now you're beginning to see them in a completely different way. And when you see that more and more, and because it's personal, this isn't watching something out there, when you see that it's so precious and so a part of you, that it's so serious, that you feel that, you know, this has got to change. I can't keep doing this. This is crazy. I'm seeing things in a different light, and I can't go there anymore. I can't be that person as I used to be. Things have got to change because this is not conducive to my happiness. Never mind what it may spill out onto other people. This is just, come on, you know, this is just rubbish. That's called waking up. You're beginning to wake up to these things. And yet there's a part of you all that time that's not involved with that at all. And that's the bit, more and more you begin to, well, hang on, maybe, wouldn't it be a lot better if I was actually more and more in this state of being able to see and to observe and to know, but not actually be caught up and carried by. And then more and more you want to take refuge. It's called going for refuge, into that part of you that's not a part of this stuff that you're completely enslaved to, that just possesses you, that you're just a plaything of these things. But slowly, because you have this willingness to use that stillness in a skillful way, it's called waking up, because it's bright and it's alive and it knows. Within that, you're not even creating wisdom. You think you're making this, oh, I'm really getting wiser. Actually, you're not. You're unveiling, revealing what's already there. It's already there within this, what you think is just a state, like the blue sky is just like a thing, just like a mirror. That's only the beginning. That's only the doorway. The more you stay, the more you realise that all of this understanding that begins to come through that experience of stillness, actually, you've got this, well, you're not even making it. You're not making the stillness, which you're beginning to get a bit comfortable with. I'm not actually manufacturing this. This is already here. But even this understanding that begins to write, to reveal itself, that you're not even making that either. That too, that there is in this stillness. It's all there. All the wisdom in the whole of creation is in your stillness. Every one of us. It's not the preserve of any individual. And that's there. And the more you can be still, the more you can be skillful with that, the more that will rise. That will rise and rise and transform. And you will let go of non-understanding. And when you let go, then you will be free. Then you'll be free. Then you'll be in that place of limitless peace and freedom, no thingness. Even transcend the myth of death itself. It's all here waiting to show you the truth. The thing that, the fear that grips us more than that, that completely conditions our life. The fear of death, that we're going to die, go into the unknown, suffering. And who knows, go to hell, whatever. The fear that, and it's the one fear that we know that we're going to come up against. The one experience we know that's guaranteed in life is that. Well, the answer to that is here. Right in that stillness. Not in it. Oh, it's just like a mirror. It's very nice, but so what? Stay with it. encourage it to open, so that the what is seemingly buried within that stillness begins to come to the surface, and everything transforms, everything changes, even to that sort of ultimate sense of fear that we got, that we're going to die, and we're going to become, who knows, nothing, whatever. Even that's a part of the joke. And you have the potential to laugh at it through wisdom, not through fear. But those tools are taking you on that journey, are helping to for it to rise up and to come and to be liberated, to shine through all of this nonsense that we created for ourselves. But you have to learn to be still. And learning to be still, there's a price to pay, because we are not still. And that's what you realise, that actually you're never still. How difficult is it to come here, to sit there and be still? I mean, in theory, nothing could be simpler, because it's not complicated to be still. Even a child knows what it means to be still. But can you be still? Physically, you manage to pull it off, and even that's a trip on its own, just to be physically still. But then you're still left with this fellow up here, and you see, look, just be still, and you can't. And you realise that in order to address that issue, to be still, that in order to pull that off, you're not okay to pulling it off here. It actually, you begin to realise that the whole of your life and what everything you do in your life is a part of the reason why you can't be still. But you really, really want to be still, because you really, really want to know. That means that you've got to look at the whole of your life and all the things that you're caught by and your busyness, how you're just running all the time, filling every little gap, never wanting to be still and to do nothing, because when you're doing nothing, you're not producing, you're not being productive, you're wasting your time. All the conditioning that just keeps you on the move all the time, to the extent that when you come here and you want to be still, you can't be. It's not, I want to be still. As you discover, as you all know, it doesn't work that way, does it? You have to work like hell to just do nothing. And you see that's the issue. That's what's in front of you. That's the reality of this training. That in order to go beyond suffering, to have that freedom, that this is a path of renunciation that you have to hone your life skillfully, so that you can bring as much space and simplicity as you can to yourself, so that you are continually nurturing the ability to be still. And when you're still, you will know. And if you're not still, you will never know. And no matter what you're doing, even if you're a great Buddhist evangelist and you're getting out there doing all these great works for people, doing this, that and the other, you will never know. Stillness is something that has no compromise. These are decisions you have to make. Can you let go of things? Can you renounce or not? Because I tell you what, you're not going to have your cake and eat it. Ain't going to happen. Try if you like, but it won't happen. So your decision. Well, the fear takes on the pictures, doesn't it? It creates pictures, and you get caught by the picture. But if you know that if you can somehow know that it's fear, then that's a huge inroad into it. You're already beginning to suss it. But the nature of fear is Well, what we do with fear is we tend to run away from it, or we get away from it in some way, and we can have dreams where things chase us, and we're in that state of fear. And it's like the Buddha said, that you stop in the stream and you turn around and you face it. Now, if you can turn around and face that, that's accepting it, isn't it? That's accepting whatever the scenario is. That a part of the understanding of this thing that you take to be absolutely real, and it's this and that, made up of people, made up of situations, that when you stay with it and you begin to go beyond the pictures, as it were, go beyond the things that deceive you, and you get down into the root, you will see that's where it's coming from. And that fear is that sense of self that we have, the sense of a self that's in a permanent state of fear, because it wants to make itself feel alive. It wants to affirm that it actually exists, and it's continually looking for things to grab hold of so that it can affirm that I exist. And that's why it never pulls it off, why you spend your whole life in that state of fear, running and grabbing things, that because there is no real self, that's why you can never pull it off, but it will always be thinking that it can. And so you spend your whole life running, grabbing things that are going to affirm that you exist, that this ego exists. And you see that, you can see, well, this is all ground in fear. And the way that you deal with fear, whether it be fear in a very simple, obvious, straightforward way, and I've actually written about one of my fears, because one of the manifestations of fear are big hairy monsters that are going to come and kill you, and you're terrified of them, so you run away from them, and you spend your whole life running away from them, until maybe one day you decide, well, I'm not going to run away. I'm beginning to clock this fellow, that's my experience, beginning to clock this fellow, what's going on here. And anyway, I've had enough of this. I just can't be doing this. If this fellow wants to kill me and eat me, well, just get on with it, because I just can't be bothered running anymore. So then what you do is you turn around and you face it. This thing that you've always been running from, or you don't know that's this sort of thing, this object, this creature, this person, whatever, that you're always retreating from all the time, is that you turn and you face it. And you say, well, okay, well, here I am. I'm not running from you anymore. I'm looking you straight in the eye. Now, show me who you really are. If you're really this, if you are really a monster that wants to eat me and hurt me and kill me, then here I am. I've had enough. Enjoy. And you don't have to leave a tip when you finish. Enjoy. So what you're doing is you're turning and you're facing your fears. And you face, and what happens? Am I here? Did he eat me? No. You turn and you surrender. I'm all yours, fear, like that. You see what happens to that fear. How real is that fear? And you see that if you turn it and you face it, it will show itself for what it really is, and is nothing more than a creation of your own mind. You create it, then you run away from it. You're the creator. It's not somebody who's created this monster that you then have to run away from. And you realize, when the penny begins to drop, and that's not easy, because that fear blinds you to what becomes the obvious. You become completely blinded and you're terrified, and you can't, it's too much for you. Fear is the most horrible experience. It's so powerful. You can't just battle it. You run away from it. It consumes you. It grinds you down. But when you can somehow just begin to... due to... due, 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 due to the awakening process that's beginning to take place, that you are actually creating your own stuff, you're creating these pictures and these images and stuff, that you're beginning to get some inkling into that, that actually this is not quite actually the truth of these things, then you begin to clock that it's all coming from this fear thing. And just like the images that come to take you away, you have to open and be with it and stay with it and say yes to it and embrace it, get intimate with it, to know what its reality is. And the same with the fear, you turn to the... If you can do it, you can be paralyzed, but nevertheless, here I am. Eat me. Condiments are over here if you want to use them. Enjoy yourself. And you see what happens to that. And fear. Like anything. No, you can relate to that. I mean, that's an extreme of real sort of naked fear. But you can bring that. You can bring that experience of fear into your daily life, into the things that life offers you to do, and you don't go there. Oh, I can't do that. That would be too difficult. It's too much of a challenge for me. I can't do that. And you recoil. And all the things in life, all the experiences that you can have, so many experiences you can have in life, you recoil from, because you're frightened. But maybe you learned that actually, if you somehow get the courage to turn and to do the thing anyway, just by doing it and becoming familiar with whatever that thing is that you were frightened to go near, it just goes away, doesn't it? And then it's and you think, well, what was all that about? Because you decided not to run away anymore, not to recoil, but to actually do it. And that's called stepping out of your comfort zone, rather than retreat and feel safe and secure. And most of it is because you don't want to make a fool of yourself. A lot of that is your self-image that you're protecting, and you don't want that experience, so you say no. And it's whatever the thing is, whatever the pictures are. That the root of that is fear. So what you do is you experiment, and what this training encourages you to do, and absolutely comes and sits in front of you if you want to do this training, is that your comfort zone is being challenged continually. And are you prepared to rise to the challenge of doing something that you've never done before, that you've always recoiled from? Are you now prepared to take a deep breath and do something that you feel uncomfortable with because you're not familiar with it? That's why you've never done it. And you have the fear of messing up more often than not, of making a mistake, as I say, making a fool of yourself, damaging your precious self-image. So you say, oh no, I can't do that. I can't go. But now you do it. You just... The universe is presenting you an opportunity, and you can either, or you can say, oh, what the hell, and go and do it. And once you do it, it's gone. That's fear. And what have you done? You faced up to it. You've opened yourself to it, and you've walked into it. That's called getting out of your comfort zone, because comfort zones is about fear. That's all fear out there, and I'm staying nice and secure in what I know. I feel safe here. Nothing can touch me here. In other words, you don't have to face up to yourself. you build this little thing around you, and you only live a fraction of the opportunities in life, of what you can experience in your life. You diminish yourself and diminish yourself till you're this little frightened thing, entity. It's called fear. But what you do, as best you can, when something comes along, you have the opportunity to challenge it. Are you prepared to give it a go? And be prepared to get it wrong. Be prepared to mess up. Are you prepared to do that? make a mistake. And lo and behold, when you step out of that, so much it just, it falls away. And that's turning and facing your monsters. Is it what you think that it is? Is it going to eat you, devour you, or not? So you say, yes, okay, come and devour me. And you realize that that monster is a creation of your own mind. It is not out there. It is not something separate. But it is what you, and that's why we end up in this little cage. And we wonder why life is unsatisfactory. Because you box yourself in and only just barely do things, a little of your full potential. It's fear. It's all fear. And you're protecting something. Or you imagine you're protecting it. Something feels threatened by that. Well, then expose that thing to the threat and see how it works out. And you get that opportunity through your lifetime, even almost on a daily basis, you get the opportunity to step out of your comfort zone. And if you want to do this training, you're always being prepared and always stepping out of your comfort zone. If you're going to retreat into the comfort zone and you don't want the challenge of this training, then why are you bothering? Don't delude yourself. At least do your best when things come along that challenge you, that people and situations that you don't want to do, that you can't, that you feel uncomfortable with, and yet somehow the universe is saying, well, come on, now's the time. Now's the time to put that one to bed. Here you are. It's giving you the opportunity. Are you going to pick it up and take it? And when you do, you're free. And it's one thing after the next, after the next, after the next. It's fear. It's all fear. We get lost in the 10,000 things in the pictures. And then we got different values. We put things in. This is important. That's not important. This is a big fear, small fear. All sorts of, you know, and then we pick and choose and we look, just stand back and see the whole of who you are as this separate, frightened individual. It's all coming from a sense of fear, a sense of separation and loneliness and fear. And that's what we are addressing. Seeing the reality of that experience. Is it really like that? This is why it's an adventure. Adventures means you're always going into the unknown. If you want to know what's around the next corner, if you know what's around the next corner, how is it an adventure? Nonsense. Everything's like a calculated risk. You're not stupid. You're not going to go into the jungle without some form of defence from the wild animals. But in the same way, you do the sensible thing, but then you still then step out and have the adventure and the experience and the richness of living that experience. Always an element of risk, but if you're not prepared to step out, this will never work for you. You're just being a soporific little bubble. And many do. And many, many Buddhists are like that. And there have been people in this group like that. But the time comes when it all just becomes, it doesn't work anymore. The vitality's gone. It all just sort of, like a balloon, it just deflates. Because you're frightened to step out and take a chance. Well, well, you've worked that one well, haven't you? I'm not stupid, you know.